The Unexplored Territory Podcast. For this episode, we invited Piet Kieler back to the show to catch us up on some of the recent announcements and changes when it comes to visa. Hey, Piet, welcome back to the show.
Hi there, Duncan. Thanks for having me back.
Now, I'm not going to ask you to introduce yourself, as you've been to the show many times. And on top of that, you have the most popular episodes. But before we start diving into the topic of today, it is probably good if you could share something that people don't know about you just yet, Piet.
Yeah, most certainly. I think, the first thing maybe that comes to mind that many might be surprised about me anyways, was that I was a climber for several years, about 15 years, in fact. And I used to focus on what's called sport climbing or free climbing, and not to be confused with free soloing, where I was using a rope. But I've really focused all my free time and attention to climbing all the time, all over the place, training, all that sort of thing. And it might be surprising for many because, you know, if they meet me in person, I'm not exactly the most imposing figure that you'd run into. But it was a great sport and learned a lot of things. One of them certainly being fear management along the way.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Well, I guess, you know, when you talk about not being imposing, I guess your weight probably helps with climbing. It's I can't imagine just, you know, hanging by one finger on a ledge or whatever it is, even with a rope. So that must be crazy.
Yeah, indeed. It was one of those things where weight was always working to your favor if you had a good strength to weight ratio. And all of the climbing that I focused on was, you know, a lot of very steep overhanging rock. And so as long as you could maintain that and some good endurance and, you know, then you would be set up for success a little bit more. But like anything, that when you're focused on something specifically, you know, if you work hard enough at it, eventually you're going to get better.
Now, on the topic of things getting better, I think one of those things which has been massively improved over the last couple of months is, of course, VSAN. And if you look at VSAN itself, I think one of the biggest improvements for customers, though, is probably the changes that we've introduced for the VSAN Ready Notes. So maybe you can talk us through the VSAN Ready Note configurations and what has changed for that specifically.
Yeah, certainly. So I think a lot of the recent changes you might be referring to here is focused a lot on supported hardware. And the delay is sort of the announcements that we've had recently don't necessarily align with a lot of our actual announcements, excuse me, for a new version of a product, because we're working hard with our partners to make sure that these systems are validated and so forth. So we've had a fair amount of recent announcements around that. Now, they've sort of break in to two parts. One is that we've had brand new ReadyNode profiles or updated ReadyNode profiles for VSAN ESA in both an aggregated VSAN HCI arrangement as well as a disaggregated VSAN Max arrangement. And now I know we'll probably touch on VSAN Max a little bit more, but a lot of these have been focused on lowering the barrier of entry. So we want to make sure that customers can use the Express Storage architecture in really any kind of environment. And when we think about the VSAN Ready Nodes for a VSAN HCI arrangement, I think one of the biggest introductions that we've made there is we've lowered the minimum requirements for the AF0 Ready Node, which is our entry-level Ready Node. That requires just a single storage device now. You know, it's really quite extraordinary from where we came from, in which when we first announced the Express Storage architecture, and we had sort of fairly lofty standards on that because we wanted customers to really see the performance capabilities there. But with the feedback that we've got from the customers, they wanted to use this everywhere. And even if it just meant taking advantage of some of that storage efficiency. So we've really lowered that barrier for entry across all of our ready nodes, and not just the entry-level AF0 ready node, but we've looked at each one of the ready node profiles and sort of lowered those so that customers can, you know, revisit what their sizing requirements are and then have this lower point of entry. And I think it's really quite impressive when you look at it now. You know, you can have a vSAN host that has just 128 gig of RAM and 16 cores and a single storage device.
One of the reasons we actually introduced those configurations, especially the AF0 one, in my opinion, is to align with the licensing that we've introduced. So especially with vSphere Foundation and, of course, with VMware Cloud Foundation. Now, it's probably good to talk through some of those licensing aspects as well. Now, I realize you're not a licensing person, so this is probably the disclaimer that we need to add. We are not the experts, and we are definitely not responsible for licensing, but I do think it's probably good to discuss what is included with VVF and what's included with VCF and how that actually works.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm quite happy to say that I'm not a licensing expert, as it helps avoid a lot of the intricacies of, you know, knowing how some of these little matters work. So we were more than happy to hand that off to some of the experts here at Broadcom. But I can sort of give an overview of what we have in terms of licensing. And in many ways, the good news is that these changes were made in a way to help simplify how the products are licensed. You know, we certainly had a lot of products and a lot of SKUs in the past, and we were really aiming to simplify that. And we just simply by removing a lot of the complexity there, reducing the, you know, which offerings were what, how they were licensed, if they were licensed differently, and so forth. So when we think about the current licensing scheme used now, it really falls into two general categories. That first being VMware Cloud Foundation. And of course, this is our sort of full stack, full private cloud offering. And this is licensed on a per physical core basis. And that's the sort of the unit of resources that we use for a license, which is frankly almost the standard in the industry these days. Now, not only does this VCF license entitle you to all the capabilities of VCF, you know, vSphere, ARIA operations, ARIA for logs, all of the, you know, the entire suite, it also provides storage. And that comes in the form of vSAN storage. And so for every VCF license, we have one terabyte of vSAN storage per physical core that the customer is entitled to. So if you think about something like, let's go with an example here where we have a 10-host vSAN cluster, and each host has 64 cores in that. If you buy VCF licenses for that, that would give you 640 terabytes of storage that you can use. It's yours. And you can, you know, deploy vSAN, and you all of a sudden have this storage solution that you never knew you had. And that's really important for making sure that we're offering this VCF as a full stack solution. You know, vSphere made its name off of managing resources for compute and memory. So it really makes a lot of sense that it's doing it for storage now. And then, of course, if customers need additional storage, they can buy additional vSAN capacity in one terabyte increments. They don't need to buy more cores in order to satisfy their capacity needs. Now, the second part of this, or the second sort of license offering, is VMware vSphere Foundation, or VVF. And this essentially includes the basic version of vSphere. And that's also licensed on a per physical core basis as well. Now, this one's a little bit different in the sense that the entitlement gives you one or 100 gigabytes of storage for vSAN, but think of it as a trial capacity. So let's say, for example, if you had a 4-host management cluster with 16 cores, it's a really small little cluster, that would entitle you to 6 terabytes of vSAN storage. And that could serve as a nice, you know, small little management cluster or something of that sort. Now, if you want to expand that, you also have a vSAN add-on offering. But unlike the VCF offering, that the additional vSAN add-on capacity doesn't stack on top of what you're entitled to. You have to start from scratch in that arrangement. So that's something for us and for the customers to be mindful of if they're looking at the various offerings.
Yeah, and that's probably good to mention as well that we've seen some changes over the last couple of months since we introduced the new licensing. So if you're listening to this, you know, 3 months from now or 5 months from now, you may want to go back and check some of the documentation on the licensing because it could have changed again. I think a lot of the changes that we've introduced recently were based on the feedback that we've got from customers directly, right, Pete?
Yeah, and one of the things I think early on that many of our customers were trying to figure out was, well, how much do I have in as far as overall capacity? Because if you note, we are referring to the capacity in a per terabyte arrangement versus per terabyte, so base 2 versus base 10, and they may not be quite sure what, you know, how much they actually need. So, you know, of course, our friend William Lamb has a great PowerShell script to help customers understand what they need for the new licensing scheme, and that will be a great offering or a great option until we can sort of build some tools within the product to help render that information a little bit more clearly right within the UI.
Yeah, I was talking to William recently and I already told him, I said, you went from an API expert fairly quickly to a licensing expert. So yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, like you said, that script is very useful. I've already pointed a bunch of customers and partners to it. And I think it's, if you haven't seen it yet and you're looking into relicensing or you need to license a new environment or a currently existing environment, I would highly encourage you to use that script because it, you know, gives you all of the information that you need. Now, we're not here to talk about licensing, but I just want to talk about some of the technology that we've recently made available. It was already introduced, which was vSAN Max. We had a full episode on vSAN Max, episode 59, but it's probably good to talk about, you know, some of the details again, because maybe not everyone has listened to it. So, you know, what is vSAN Max and what kind of capabilities does it bring to customers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I think it's worth clearing up because we certainly have ongoing questions from many of our customers, large and small. You know, what is it and why do I need it? The best way to think of it when we think about vSAN Max is that it's our centralized shared storage solution for vSphere clusters. So unlike a vSAN HCI cluster, which aggregates compute and storage resources into the same hosts that make up that cluster, a vSAN Max cluster is simply a cluster that is designed to provide storage services only, a storage-only cluster, so to speak. And it's designed to serve these storage services to multiple vSphere clusters in your environment. So in a sense, it can serve as a replacement or an option instead of a traditional modular storage array. Now, much like a vSAN HCI cluster, vSAN Max cluster also gives you that capability of sort of this incremental scalability. So you can grow on a per host basis, or you can add more storage devices, just like you would in a traditional vSAN HCI cluster. And that's sort of the panacea of all storage goals, is to make that growth easy and predictable. Now, when we think about vSAN Max, sometimes this is a part that our customers might get a little confused by. They say, well, should I choose vSAN ESA or vSAN Max? And I think that it's worth sort of clarifying what this is. vSAN ESA is the underlying engine that we use to power vSAN Max. vSAN Max is a deployment option. It's not a standalone product. It's an option in at the time that you're configuring the cluster. Do you want to have a disaggregated arrangement, such as vSAN Max, or do you want an aggregated cluster known as a vSAN HCI cluster? Both are powered by vSAN ESA, so that helps sort of sort through some of the you know, the challenges and the misunderstandings there. As initially, when we first announced vSAN Max, it was sort of looked at or maybe perceived as a standalone product, but in fact, it's really just a deployment option.
Yeah, and one of the other things that we initially announced in terms of vSAN Max were the ReadyNode configurations. And I still recall that podcast and we were discussing it, and some of those requirements were quite large. Now, I know we've made some changes around this. I've been talking to product management and I've seen some of your updates from a blogging perspective. So it's probably good to talk us through that as well, because I'm thinking that a lot of customers will appreciate these changes.
Yeah, I think it's almost worth sharing a little bit of a backstory, I think, on vSAN Max and sort of how we initially announced it and why it was the way it was. I think when we think about vSAN Max, it was really inspired by some of our largest customers who said, yeah, we like what vSAN offers, but we, for one reason or another, we want centralized shared storage. Can you give this to us? And so that was really where it was inspired from. And we knew that we had this, you know, amazing fully distributed storage solution, so we could certainly build it out as such. And we worked with our ReadyNode vendors to gear these hosts towards a solution that offered massive levels of scalability. But something interesting sort of happened, and it was right around the time of VMware Explorer Barcelona. And it was customers, large and small, were very interested in vSAN Max, but we didn't necessarily have an offering as far as ready nodes that were supporting of that. So for, you know, medium-sized customers who didn't need 7 petabytes of storage, but they were really interested in it, they really didn't have anywhere to go in terms of how they could sort of scale this down. So the first thing that we did was that we've reduced the number of hosts now to that are required for a vSAN Max cluster. The old minimum used to be 6. That was so that we could do a RAID 6 erasure code across a series of 6 hosts. And that's been reduced down to 4 hosts. This will give customers the ability to store their data in really space-efficient RAID 5 erasure coding, but while still having the ability to regain full levels of compliance if there was a sustained host failure. So that was a big step in the right direction for some of these smaller customers. The next part is that we've lowered the hardware for vSAN Max significantly. We've actually lowered it twice, and this was through some of the testing and validation efforts that we needed to do with our partners. So right now, the smallest ready node certified for vSAN Max can now have just 20 terabytes per host. And it can even use 10 gig networking. Even though we recommend 25 or higher, it is supported on 10 gig networking for this entry-level ready node. So that means that you can have a 4-host vSAN Max cluster that offers 80 terabytes per cluster. And that's really geared for a lot of these you know, smaller enterprises that's sort of what they're looking for. They're looking to replace their existing array, and that's roughly, they maybe need, you know, 80 to 100 terabytes of storage capacity. This is perfect for that. So it makes it a much more viable option for a lot of our customers.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so one of the things I was wondering, if you look at those ReadyNode configurations, I know when we initially announced it, although you could make some changes, we weren't allowing customers to make huge changes. So does that mean with the introduction of different ReadyNode configurations for vSAN Max specifically, The customers are a bit more flexible as well when it comes to introducing changes to their configuration.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the things I think it's really one of the more misunderstood aspects of our ReadyNode program, and in terms of flexibility and the ability to make changes. Now, we have a knowledge base article that focuses specifically on what you can and cannot change within vSAN ReadyNode. And so it deals with all of the specifics. But I think the best way to think about this is that it can be summarized, is that any hardware that is certified for use with vSAN ESA by a ReadyNode vendor can be used within a ReadyNode. And so whether it's, you know, CPU, the storage devices themselves, the networking, as long as they're certified by those ReadyNode vendors, you should be good to go. Now, one of the reasons why we have multiple ReadyNode profiles is that we want to help the customers achieve this balance of resources when they're building a host. So we know that it could be really easy for you to say, you know what, I want to make as storage dense of a host as I can. So I'm going to pack 24 storage devices in there, and I don't need very many CPU resources or memory resources or networking, but I have a lot of storage. Well, that wouldn't be able to serve some of the needs of those storage devices at scale. You know, large amounts of I/O that would be requested from those from the data that's being stored on there. So, in a lot of ways, those resources would be stranded a bit. When you're designing a system, in theory, the best kind of return on that investment is if you have these resource types that are so evenly balanced that, in a sense, you run out of all of the resources at the same time, CPU, memory, and compute. That's you're utilizing it in the best way possible. Now, that's nearly impossible for you to try to predict, but these ReadyNode profile sizes help you have that proportional balance there. And our recommendation generally is when you're looking at something like storage capacity and you say, I want, you know, X amount of capacity in this cluster, but I want to increase the amount of storage from this specific ReadyNode. If it's almost surpassing the next ReadyNode profile up, just go ahead and choose that one. That's going to help ensure that you have the, you know, the supporting CPU, networking, and memory to satisfy all of the storage demands within that server.
And I think you already alluded to it when it comes to the next question, because one of the things I wanted to ask you is when it comes to the different use cases for vSAN Max versus vSAN HCI or the HCI configuration itself, why would customers pick one over the other? I think that's probably something that customers are wondering now. Why would they use vSAN Max versus HCI or HCI versus vSAN Max?
Yeah, it's really sort of turning into one of the most frequently asked questions when we have been showcasing what vSAN Max can do. They see this stuff and they go, okay, well, this is great, but what would I use it for? There's really, it boils down to a handful of various reasons. One, we know for sure that from our certainly our customers who initially inspired the need for vSAN Max was the ability to scale storage and compute fully independently from each other. That was a big driver. But there's other interesting parts about their needs and their requirements. Oftentimes, they would look at this and they would say, well, I want to and I need to keep my lifecycle management of my storage separate as well. And within a vSAN HCI arrangement where you aggregate it all in to the same cluster, that's nearly impossible because let's say if you're updating the hypervisor, you're updating the hypervisor for both storage and compute, where this vSAN Max allows you to maintain those things separately. The other sort of use case that is coming up more and more here is the ability to extend the life of your existing vSphere clusters. Remember that when we have a vSAN Max cluster inside an environment and it's serving the needs of those vSphere clusters, the vSphere clusters, they don't need to comply with the VCG for vSAN or the HCL for vSAN. They can just meet the requirements for vSphere, and they're good to go. And so that's, you know, for all of our customers that are holding on to the last, you know, vestiges of their blade environments, for example, they can continue to take advantage of those blade servers using vSAN Max. Now, when we think about there's some use cases where you have applications, let's say high-end databases that are, you know, very spendy, very pricey, but they are, and so that motivates the administrator to keep the cluster as small as possible for them. This is also where vSAN Max can come in to play nicely as well. They can create 2 and 3 host vSphere clusters and have it stored on a vSAN Max cluster with high levels of resilience, because that, you know, that's decoupled from the vSphere cluster, and they can just treat it like their centralized shared storage that they would normally have in their environment, but just with a lot more a lot more flexibility. So those are some of the use cases that we're seeing. One of the things, though, is that, you know, oftentimes we have been getting the question of, well, which one should I choose? And that's really something that we're leaving in the hands of the customer. You can choose one, you can choose the other, or you can choose both. They can run side by side within a vCenter server, so you can have your VMware Cloud Foundation environment, your workload domain can consist of aggregated vSAN HCI clusters, as well as disaggregated vSAN Max clusters serving the needs of your vSphere clusters. So that's the good part on all of this. And it also aligns really quite nicely with the licensing as well, because regardless of what you choose, it is licensed in the very same way. So it's ultimately what the needs of the organization are.
Yeah, I think what you've mentioned in terms of the operational aspect is probably really important. It's one of those questions that I had customers asking me as well. What should I be using, HCI or the Max configuration? And as you said, it fully depends on how you are planning on operating it. Now, talking about the operational aspect, one of the things that I also noticed you recently posted about, which is something that I hadn't even noticed myself yet, is that we made some changes in terms of capacity reporting. Both on the vSphere level, but apparently also on the VCF level. Now, I don't do much with VCF yet, so it's probably good to talk us through and probably talk me through it as well.
Yeah. Now, so one of the things that we did in vSAN 8 Update 2 was we made some specific improvements about how we render capacity usage for the user. You know, this is actually something that it's much more complex than most users will perceive in terms of how is the capacity used? What are overheads? And, you know, how should that be displayed? How much capacity am I using and how much do I have left? They're simple questions in some ways, but they're sort of complex in order to make that achievable. When we introduced vSAN ESA, we store the data in a little different way than we did in the original storage architecture. And any kind of storage system has overheads and metadata that is used to help the system understand where the data is located at. Well, when we think of in terms of storage capacity, we need to account for that. And we need to make sure that the user can reconcile when they are storing data, and let's say 100 gig VM, how much is actually being consumed on the storage system itself. So in vSAN 8 Update 2, we introduced a measurement known as an LFS overhead or a log structured file system overhead. This is a unique amount of metadata that is stored with each and every object within vSAN. And by showing what that object overhead is, that's going to help our users really be able to reconcile the differences between what is stored on the system versus what's stored within the guest VM. That's what we're really shooting for. And the more accurate we can give this capacity reporting information, the better. And since it's within the vCenter server UI, then it's also available via API, which is really important if you're using things like ARIA operations and so forth. Now, some of the details are, very intricate. And do you necessarily need to know them as an administrator? Not really. But what this does is it just simply helps reconcile some of the capacity reporting numbers when you're trying to make everything add up.
Yeah, I think it's very important. Although you may not need to have all of the information, I think it's still very important to understand, where particular parts of the capacity that you have or thought you had available went to. Now, one of the other things which is really important when it comes to capacity, in my opinion, and especially sizing, is the compression ratio. Now, when we introduced vSAN ESA, you talked us through how compression worked, and you explained, you could potentially get, 4x more or a better compression ratio than you would have with OSA. Now, in reality, of course, you're not going to get 4x or 5x or whatever it ends up being. But from what I've seen, the numbers actually look quite nice compared to OSA. So it's probably good if you could talk us through that. So what does it actually look like right now? And just as a disclaimer, we're not saying that everyone will reach those numbers, but these are the averages that we are seeing out in the field at the moment. So can you talk us through what it looks like for OSA and what it also looks like for ESA?
Sure. Yeah, indeed. And it is really worth noting that when you talk about anything regarding compression, we need to understand that that is an opportunistic space efficiency feature. So it's striving to make it more space efficient, but it sort of depends on the data. But what we did do within vSAN ESA was we made the mechanics behind how we compress the data better. And as a result, our compression ratios are better. Now, how much better? Let's sort of work through some numbers here. So the telemetry data that we had for the original storage architecture showed that typically or on average, we would get about 1.2x compression ratio. That means that the amount of data would be reduced by, 17-18%, whatever the math works out for that. Now, for the Express storage architecture, the average is going about 1.5x. Now, at first, you may go, okay, well, that's just an incremental improvement. But let's dive down into the numbers here a little bit to really understand that this is quite significant. So the first part is that while the average itself is 1.5x, we have about 25% of the customers who are achieving 1.7x or better. So that's a pretty large chunk of customers who are actually seeing much better compression ratios. It's one of the tricky parts when we're working with the averages. Sometimes it really doesn't tell the entire story. So when we look at that part, then we say, okay, that's getting up to be a sizable difference. Now, what we need to do, though, is we need to sort of look at in terms of how does this compare to the original storage architecture in terms of the data that would be stored within a system. So let's take 800 terabytes, for example. If in the original storage architecture at 1.2x, that would equal about 666 terabytes. If you were to do 1.5x, that's dropping down to like 533 terabytes. So about a 20% improvement. But if you were to look at 1.7x, that's getting up to be about a 30% improvement. And it would take less than 500 terabytes of stored data within that data store. Now, if we factor in one other part, then it becomes really quite impressive. And that is when, for the original storage architecture, most of our customers, for a large percentage of their data, was using a RAID 1 mirroring. So, and whereas within the Express storage architecture, most everyone is using RAID 5 or RAID 6 erasure coding. So now let's say we have something where you have 400 terabytes of data. And in the original storage architecture, we needed to mirror that data in order to make it resilient. And then you factor in the compression. That would normally be about 666 terabytes. If we were to take that same amount of data, 400 terabytes, and we were to just go with the ESA average of 1.5x, and we're using RAID 5 erasure coding, that means that that would only consume about 333 terabytes. So that's half of the storage capacity needed to store the same amount of data within an ESA cluster versus an OSA cluster. There's no compromises on performance. In fact, it's always faster and so forth. But that's a great sort of illustration of how we're using a combination of space efficiency to really realize the full benefit of the Express storage architecture.
I think you can say that the NVMe devices almost pay for itself compared to the, you know, SATA devices or the SAS devices that you would normally be using with OSA. It's a huge difference. And I really like how you explained it in terms of before RAID 1 or before RAID 5 and then with RAID 1 and with RAID 5. That makes a big difference. And hopefully everyone will have it enabled by default. It is enabled by default, but I know you can disable it. But please don't disable it unless you absolutely need to, when there's a workload that doesn't benefit from compression. Well, that's awesome, Pete. Thanks for that. But before we let you go, we always ask one final question, and that is if you have any famous last words or if there's anything you would like to plug.
Oh, if I have any famous last words, it sounds like I'm not going to be on this earth anymore. So I'm not sure I want to fully commit on that. But no, really, in terms of vSAN here and vSAN ESA, just continue to stay tuned on all of the things that we're working on. We have a lot of exciting things that are in the queue and ready to be announced here in the coming months. It's just always such a pleasure to be working on something that is changing so quickly, and there's so much development work on, and I'm thrilled to see what our customers are able to see in the future and really be able to take advantage of some of these all-new capabilities within vSAN and VMware Cloud Foundation.
And that's it. We've reached the end of another episode of the Unexplored Territory podcast. If I have to summarize today's episode, then my key takeaway would be that your feedback matters. Pete has provided multiple examples of vSAN product changes based on the feedback all of you provided in the last year. Keep it coming. Again, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast or rate the podcast wherever possible. If you have any feedback, send us a message on X on @unexploredpod. Last but not least, I would like to thank Pete for another fantastic episode.
Thank you.